The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
And we're live. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who can't talk. He's got something that is stopping him from talking. Can you imagine Bill Buckmaster can't talk? Well, we're taking advantage of that. And this is trusted local news and talk broadcasting from the Green Things in Socolow Village Studio here at KVOI, your trusted local news and talk station. And we've got two guests today, and then I'm going to interview myself because it's Tuesday and I normally do a financial segment. But in this first segment, I am really pleased and thrilled to have Stephen Higginbotham, who is the dean at Pima Community College of the School of Fine Arts. And anybody who knows about me knows that fine arts is kind of a thing I really get into. So, Stephen, thank you for coming here and welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
So I'm going to tell you a little story, and then I'm going to turn it over to you. But when I was 15, I came home and announced to my parents that I wanted to be an opera singer, and this thing about being a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer wasn't going to hack it. That made my parents tremendously happy. And then spent the rest of my teen years telling me I needed something to fall back on, like, you know, something STEM-ish, like science or technology or engineering or math or something. So you're the dean of fine arts at a community college here in Tucson. Why is that a good thing for young people to start getting involved in? And how can you build a career in that kind of range of subject matter?
Well, that's a great question. And I followed the same pathway as you. I was going to school to become a doctor. And I decided, no, this theater thing that I've been doing, and I've been, you know, taking time to take classes and to sing and dance and to learn more, to rehearse, to work on shows. This is the thing that I should be doing with my life. It's what makes me happy. It's what brings joy to others. You know, so I followed the same pathway as you.
Hard to earn a living.
It can be challenging sometimes, but you just have to be smart about your choices. But I would say this about why should a student study the arts? I would say that in the arts, you learn valuable skills in communication, in creativity, in collaboration, and those are unique to this field. I mean, when you think about somebody working on a show or on a production or on an art project, there's always a deadline. They have to have it done by a certain time.
There's a bunch of discipline.
So you need discipline in order to get that done. A lot of times there are a lot of people who you have to work with in order for it to come to fruition.
So collaboration is really important in the arts.
Right. And then the communication with others in order to get those things done and to celebrate your work is really important. Those skills, communication, collaboration, creativity, are really kind of honed in these areas.
And what subjects are kind of under your tutelage as the Dean of Fine Arts?
At Pima College, We have four departments: the Department of Digital Arts, of Visual Arts, Performing Arts, and Fashion Design. So in digital arts, we have gaming and simulation, we have film and animation, and we have graphic design.
Okay.
Digital arts. In visual arts, we have painting, drawing, sculpting, ceramics, photography, weaving,
all of that in a community college. That's
great.
All
of it. And we have fantastic studios in order to study all of these things.
Are they all out on the West Side campus or are they scattered?
You know, we teach art classes on every single campus here in Tucson. Our West campus is kind of our hub for our arts area, So we offer more classes at that site. But we do offer art classes on every campus.
So if I'm a aspiring Broadway performer, do I have to audition to get in?
Well, you know, Pima College is an open enrollment institution.
Uh-huh.
And so anyone can sign up for classes here. And I celebrate that. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that we do for our community. In order, you're asking about the theater production.
Oh, sure.
So of course you have to have auditions in order to place people in the right roles in a show. Or in order to place voice parts in a choir, you have to have an audition process for that. But we like to try to be as inclusive as possible, include as many people as possible in all of our productions and all of our ensembles.
And I'm graduating from high school, and I decide to start off my post-high school education at a community college. Can I get a degree, and what can I do with that degree? Can I, you know, take it into the, you know, the world of the profession, or can I take it to a four-year college?
Yes. So you're asking what degree can you achieve at Pima College, and maybe why should you choose to come to Pima mm-hmm. College? I would recommend it. I would say, you know, at a community college, we look at our 2 years with a student as very valuable time. We want to immerse them in an experience that's almost like a conservatory setting, so that they can learn as much as possible in this amount of time and go on to pursue their dream of going on to a four-year degree or going right into the industry. But the degrees that they can achieve here at Pima are all associate's degrees: Associate of Fine Arts degrees, Associate of Applied Science in the digital arts areas, Associate of Arts in Fashion Design.
So that's preparation either for a career in one of these areas of fine arts, or to move on to a baccalaureate college. So I assume that if I, you know, kind of sign up for as a full-time student, that you're going to ask that I take more than just singing lessons.
Yes. You should take the general education requirements okay. so that you pursue your degree as well. But actually, you know, if somebody wanted to just come and participate in the choir or participate in the band, they can just do that. They can take one class. If it's a community member who's doing it for enrichment, we welcome them to our campus.
And I understand for people over 55, you have a special deal.
Half tuition.
Wow.
That is great. So if you've always wanted to take a drawing class or a painting class, or you've always wanted to learn how to act, be in an acting class, take that class now. It's half tuition.
Okay, so let's say I'm fully matriculated. I'm a full-time student.
Yes.
I'm looking for an associate's degree. I can get one at Pima College. And then the coursework that is not in the fine arts specifically, are there some standards or requirements that four-year colleges will look at to make sure that I'm acceptable to move on to a baccalaureate degree program?
Yes. So as part of your core curriculum, you're required to take the AJEC classes, which is an Arizona General Education Curriculum, and those requirements. It's about 27 credit hours or uh-huh. so. And so those are your standard classes in writing, in mathematics, in science, and the humanities. And just so that we make sure that all students are kind of getting a well-rounded core curriculum in their undergraduate degree, those are required. If you finish those classes, all of them transfer to all institutions in the state of Arizona uh-huh. and beyond. So that's a good core. And then on top of that, the other about 30, 35 credit hours, depending upon the degree program, those are specifically in the discipline that you're studying: theater, music, dance, or visual arts, graphic design.
Can some of these courses be taken online, or is that a different experience?
You know what? Online arts classes are a different experience
sure.
than being in the same studio as somebody else creating. But we do offer a whole series of classes online. You should check out our website, pima.edu, to see what classes are coming up in the spring. A lot of our appreciation classes, music appreciation, theater appreciation, art appreciation, are offered in online sections.
So I've interviewed a lot of people here in this studio, and I've never interviewed anybody who started smiling when he started and ended smiling and was smiling through the whole thing. It looks to me like you're having fun every day.
You know, I love what I do. I get to work in the arts every single day, and I think that that's a great gift. And I think that everyone who gets to do that, all the students who come, the faculty, we have amazing faculty members at Pima Community College, and we have such a great community there. I should be smiling every day.
So one last question before I let you go. If I'm a high school graduate or say a senior, and I'm thinking about getting into the fine arts, do you have advisors or people that I could talk to who could kind of guide me before I make that, you know, leap into faith, if you will?
Yes. There are two great resources I think of right off the top of my head. One is that we have a great counseling department, and each academic area has their own dedicated counselor. Adrian Smith is our counselor in the arts division. He does an amazing job with our incoming students in putting them on the right path and getting them the right classes in their schedule. Also, our faculty members are outstanding advocates for our arts programs, and they know so much about what students should be studying in each of their semesters. Reach out to a faculty member, find them as a mentor, and look for them to help, too, in advising the students.
And the best way to communicate with you or the department is to go to the website?
Yes, and I would say if you want to know about some of our arts events and performances that are coming up, go to www.pima.edu/CFA, as in Center for the Arts.
Got it.
And you could see a lot of our performances that are coming up. We have a dance concert coming up this weekend that'll be terrific. And then a whole series of events next spring. We have Singing in the Rain. It will be our spring musical. As You Like It will end up the year. We have great exhibits at the Bernal Gallery and other galleries on our campuses. So there are lots of things to see and do here at Pima.
Well, let me encourage those listeners who are interested or even maybe mildly interested to pursue that and see how much further you can go with your life by bringing the fine arts into your life and into the life of your family. And I'd like to thank you, Stephen, for coming and sharing this, 10 or 15 minutes with us.
Thank you so much. And come to Pima Community College, either as a student or as an audience member. Or come see one of our galleries. Come see one of our shows. We'd love to have you there.
You bet. Thank you. So this portion of the Bill Buckmaster Show has been presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. It's home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is now serving made-to-order hot breakfast, and it's open for lunch right now. But don't stop listening to the show. Go to lunch afterwards. And, or better yet, it's Christmas time, and Mona's is absolutely calorie-free. All the pies, all the cookies, all the Kringles will not contribute to your weight gain over the, month of December. So, have fun. Go there. Enjoy yourself. Mona's Danish Bakery. And we'll take a break and we'll be back right after that break.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Take 5 minutes to give us your input on regional transportation matters. The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee prepared draft guiding principles to consider as they prepare to develop the next RTA plan. The survey is available between mid-November and mid-December. To take the survey or to sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Great. Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through BuckmasterShow.com or at ShelleyFishman.com.
Hi, we're back live. I'm back live. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for the ailing Bill Buckmaster. And I have to just say thank you and a call out to John Couch, our engineer and producer, who's sitting there keeping us all honest and out of jail. Thank you. Now I get to do something that I'm not quite sure I know how to do. I'm going to interview myself. We have a day normally on Tuesdays in the second segment. I do a financial segment with Bill, but he's not here, and so I'm going to interview myself. And so the first question is, how's the market doing? Well, the market's doing kind of flat today, so we don't have to talk about it too much. It's still close to all-time highs, though it's pulled back for the past couple of days a little bit. The economy seems to be okay. We've had a jobs report last Friday that came in a little bit higher than expected on jobs, and unemployment fell down to 3.5%, which is about as low as it's been in forever. And at the same time, we have a recession going on in the manufacturing sector, and wages have not really kept pace with the pace that they were rising earlier in the year. So we've got wages going up at an annual rate of about 3.5%, with inflation down at around 2%. So yes, wages are climbing, but they are not climbing fast enough to overcome one of the problems that Bill and I have spoken about on this segment several times, and that is the problem of income inequality. So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about some of the different plans the Democrats have been putting out there to really deal with two problems, and they're both part of the same problem. The first is income inequality, and the second is restoring the balance and being able to fund infrastructure and other things that the government needs to do and can't do now, given the fact that we're running about a $1 trillion annual deficit. So what the Democrats have been doing, and each of the Democrats have offered different ways of doing it, but I think the general idea is to start a discussion on the Democrat side of the aisle about how to fix some of these problems, because we think that if we can't fix these problems, it's going to have a very large negative effect on our economy and our economic growth over the next decade. So what are the elements of these plans? And let's just give you a little bit of background and context. We have a problem that's been kind of building up over 40 years, which is the fact that the middle class has not been sharing in the growth that the economy has been experiencing over these 40 years. So the middle class is kind of stagnant in that respect. So we have a 40-year problem that somehow has to be addressed, and we have a going-forward problem, which is once you get the fix, you can't fix 40 years of a problem overnight. So how are the candidates addressing some of this? Well, part of the problem that is causing this is the change in tax policy. During the periods during which we have had the highest growth in GDP, we've had tax rates, which are, especially at the top, much higher than they are today. And so by lowering those tax rates continually, we've run into the problem that the rich are simply pocketing, if you will, more and more of the growth in GDP. Now, you know, that may be by design, because the general principle was that the people who get those tax breaks will then reinvest in the economy, and that was called trickle-down or supply-side economics. Well, that hasn't worked out so well, especially if you're part of the middle class. So some of the proposals that we're seeing would raise the top tax rate. Today, it's 37%. When I was growing up, it was as high as 93%. Kennedy dropped it down to about 75. We had the Reagan administration drop it down into the high 30s, and then Clinton raised it again to the mid 40s. And it seems that when we raise that rate above about 38 or 39%, the economy does just fine, and so does the middle class. So we're seeing really different proposals from each of the candidates to raise that top rate. The next thing is changing or eliminating the differences in how we tax capital gains and how we tax income. So if you're a W-2 or a 1099 employee, then you're paying taxes at a rate that is according to the rate schedule, if you will. So the capital gains taxes that you pay on the gains of your investments, and by the way, most of the income for wealthy people comes from those kind of investments, those are taxed at a much lower rate. So what we're seeing is that the Democratic candidates, you know, through different flavors and different ways of approaching it, want to change those rules to make capital gains taxes more in keeping with the way we tax general income. The other change that we're seeing proposed is changing the inheritance rules. Now, those rules have changed over the past 20 years significantly. When I started off in this business, the general rule was that if you were leaving more than $1 million, there was going to be taxes on everything you left to your beneficiaries above $1 million. Today, that number for a single person is over $10 million, and for a married couple, it is over $20 million. So the number of people who are affected by inheritance taxes has dropped precipitously. So one way of changing those rules is being proposed is to reset the way stocks are passed to beneficiaries. Right now, if I've owned stocks for 30 or 40 years and they've gone up tremendously in value, when I die and pass them to my beneficiaries, the beneficiaries get to reset the basis, cost basis for those stocks to be the cost or the price for those stocks on the day I died, which means the government has forfeited all those capital gains over all that period of time. So one way to approach this problem is to adjust those rules. The other is to actually change the floor for inheritance taxes. That's a harder one to do. You know, once you raise the rate, it's harder to drop it down again. But certain of the Democratic candidates are looking at that. The other way that we're hearing a lot about is to change the elements of the Trump tax cuts. We brought the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%. Most of the Democratic candidates are saying, well, that was pretty much of a giveaway. Let's bring it back to what Obama originally proposed, which was 28%. I can tell you nobody was paying the 35%, so it was probably set too high, and it was higher than the rest of the world. So we want to bring the corporate tax rate commensurate with where the rest of the world is taxing so that it doesn't incent our corporations to be going offshore and offshoring a lot of money. want to reduce loopholes, is what the Democrats are saying, and restore deductions for state and local taxes paid, which was, you know, just kind of discriminatory to, for the coastal cities and coastal states, which where a lot of rich people were able to deduct those state and local taxes, and those people were then, during the Trump tax changes, were told they could no longer do that over $10,000. So we're seeing some proposals to change that. We're also seeing some proposals for a wealth tax. We see that specifically from Sanders and Warren. That's been tried in other countries. It turns out not that easy to do, but it is a way of kind of setting 40 years aside and saying, let's catch up. So let's tax some people immediately, get some lump sum payments in there, and then drop that tax. We'll see where that goes. The objective, of course, is to speed up the process and right the wrong, or the perceived wrong, that was started 40 years ago. We're also seeing some proposals for Social Security and Medicare, and those are two programs. They're called entitlements that need to be revisited, because both those programs are in financial trouble, and even though it's kind of the political third rail, they need to be fixed. So we'll see. The good news is that, at least on the Democratic side, we're seeing these things discussed. We're recognizing that we really have problems in this area, and that those problems could really hurt our economy. So as we come to the end of this segment, I should mention that this segment was brought to you by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in historic downtown Silver City, or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
And we're back live. Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here at KVOI, your trusted local news and talk station, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio here at KVOI. And I am very pleased to be sitting here with David Safir. And David is the writer at the Tucson Weekly who focuses on all things education. And it is so important to our economy, so important to being able to succeed as a country in a competitive world, to get education right, to educate our youth, and to make sure that we are spending what we need to be spending, both in time and dollars, to make our youth qualified for the jobs of the 21st century. We know right now, for instance, here in the United States, we have, depending upon who's counting, 5 or 6 million jobs that are available today that we cannot fill with U.S. citizens because they're not skilled at doing it. So, David, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here.
David, I know that there have been some studies recently that focus on all of the states and rank those states in terms of their spending on education on students. And where does Arizona sit and how are we doing?
Well, the National Education Association just put out their yearly comparison, and they compare schools and states on all kinds of parameters. But the one that works most for me is the parameter, which is how much is spent by a state per individual student, because states have more population or less population. But when you break it down per student, then you know how much we're spending. And we rank, as we have always ranked since I have started writing in 2008, in the bottom three or four. Sometimes we've been right in the basement. Right now we're about number four from the bottom. And for people who don't know those numbers, it's still a lot. According to the National Education Association, the NEA, Arizona spends approximately $8,300 per student.
Per year?
Per year, yes. And that is a lot of money, but that gives you an idea of how much education costs. But they go up as much as $15,000 or $20,000 per student in some states.
So are teacher salaries factored into that number, or is that just...
Absolutely. Teacher salaries is probably the single largest part of the school budget, because you have to have one teacher for every, depending on how you count it, 15 or 18 or 20 or 25 students. And if you divide that up, that becomes a large amount of money. And I'm a teacher. I taught for over 30 years, and nothing replaces the teacher and nothing replaces a classroom with a reasonable number of students. And Arizona right now has too many students in every class. It's approaching something like 30 or 35, depending on where you are. And my experience was when you went above 25, you started losing people. And we also have any number of classrooms that are being taken care of by substitutes, which is awful because there aren't enough teachers, or by teachers who don't have credentials. And all that is based on the fact that we can't pay the salaries that teachers deserve, and we can't pay the salaries because our budget is low.
So does money buy quality?
No. But then again, I'm giving you a no, but.
Well, it was a loaded question, clearly.
No, it doesn't. But food doesn't buy health either.
Uh-huh.
However, there's a minimum standard of the kind of food you have to raise healthy children in terms of the food they have and the kind of nutrition you give them. Above a certain level, it may not affect things as much as it could. And if the money is misspent, it's not going to affect things. But we're down below where it should be. Our children are educationally vitamin deficient, I'll say. And there's no way you can give them the education they should get in the schools they should have, with the teachers they need, with the supplies they need, at the level we fund things now. And lots of people say we can't fund it more every year. You know, in January, the legislature comes in again, and a big deal of what they do is the budget. And a big part of the budget, especially the last 2 or 3 years, has been education spending. And we hear from Doug Ducey that he's raising it, but it's hard and there's only so much money. Well, if we're at the bottom three or four, and a number of states have median incomes and wealth that is lower than ours. The question is why they can manage it and we can't, why they can mm-hmm. manage to give more. And I've got some examples
sure.
here.
So let's open up the Buckmaster hotline just to see if we have some questions and some comments from listeners at 790-2040. Feel free to give us a call, and John in the control room will take the call and put it up on the screen, and we'll see if we can fit you in. I have a question. You're mm-hmm. you're talking about averages on a statewide basis. So, you know, the old joke is if I have my knees on a block of ice and my head in the oven, on average, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. So is there a difference from, for instance, school district to school district, or the difference between, say, Tucson and Phoenix? Does where you live determine how good an education your kids can get?
Well, that's a really good question, and the answer is a multiple answer. And
sure.
one is that in states where the funding is basically set by the property tax in an area, or what a certain district is willing, the voters are willing to vote in, there can be a difference of 2 and 3 and 4 times as much money in a wealthy suburban district and a poor urban district. Arizona has one of the few things it's done really well in terms of education is it has a certain equitable distribution of money. It's not fair, is not absolutely the way it should be. A place like Foothills or Vail, since they have more money, they can kick in more local money. But basically, we don't have fabulously rich districts or fabulously poor districts in Arizona. All of them are scraping by with too little money. And that is a good thing, I guess, in terms of equity, but the equity should be raised.
You mentioned that you had some statistics to kind of make your point clearer. Why don't you
sure.
why don't you run through some of those for us?
Well, what I did is the NEA stats show all 50 states and how they are per student, as well as in other areas. So I chose 4 states that have a median income, and as you said, averages are averages, but they have a median income about $10,000 less than Arizona, and in another ranking I saw about wealthy and poor states, Arizona was about 27 in the states, somewhere in the middle. These states are all in the bottom 5. So how much do they spend? Well, Mississippi spends about $1,000 more per student than we do. For Arizona to come to that $1,000, you'd have to add another billion. Now, this is important, Shelley.
Sure.
We right now spend $1 billion less than we spent in 2008 in real money. When the Great Recession hit, we cut like mad, and then we never came back again. So if we were back where we were in 2008, we'd be equal with, this is not something to brag about, but we'd be equal with Mississippi. It would take us $2 billion to get to Arkansas. It would take us $3 billion to get to Louisiana. And if we want to be equal with West Virginia, we would have to kick in another $4.5 billion in our budget to do it. That shows how low we are based on states that have far less income and far less wealth to deal with.
So we're competing unfavorably with 4 of the deepest South states that are traditionally viewed as terrible with education.
That's right. And they, by the way, are starting to make strides, not huge strides, because it's difficult to change things, but they're actually putting money into some good places. Mississippi is sure. supposed to be raising their reading, all kinds of things like this, and we just don't have the funds to do it.
That's shocking. We have a caller who wants to make a comment on education. I don't have a name, so... it's Matthew. Hi, Matthew. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. How you doing?
Hey, Shelley. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, you know, it's serendipity. I was just at a meeting on Sunday with the Grand Canyon Institute that came down to Tucson, because most of their people are in Phoenix. And in part of the conversation, you know, they relayed, you know, that as a state, we're easily $4 billion under in our budget, simply because of the complete ridiculous tax policies that have happened since the days of Governor Brewer going forward. And that's them being the most conservative. That means that we have given up billions and billions of real money that should be acquired by the state from corporations and individuals who should be paying it, to that would help pay for those deep cuts in school funding. The other thing was, you know, I hear from property owners locally that they're befuddled as to why they just can't get the connection. They're upset because school districts like Amphire and so forth are constantly having to do overrides. And it's obvious, you know, to anybody who this is all these problems, local problems, our inability to hire officers, our inability
sure,
to
right.
Hey, Matthew,
it's all state mandated tax cuts that make no common sense.
Right. Matthew, I'd like David to comment on what you're saying, because what you're saying is very important.
And this goes right back, Shelley, to what you were talking about, which is that there's an income inequality problem and a taxation lowering problem, and Doug Ducey tries to lower taxes, which were already low on businesses and high mm-hmm. income. And as long as we're doing that, we cannot achieve parity with West Virginia, for God's sake.
Really?
And that is a problem. And therefore, it's put more on the taxpayer, and they're upset about the property taxes. But in fact, we have a fair share problem in this state, as we do around the country.
Yeah. I need to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a TUSD proposal to open a middle school. But I'd like to pick up a little bit more and just talk about what individual parents can do, or people thinking about moving here to Arizona because maybe they have a job offer or they think it's a great place to live, and what their alternatives are for getting their kids well-educated.
Okay, sounds okay. good.
So point out that since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Now Green Things on their 13-acre site home is home also to Socolo Village and all those fine Mexican and Latin American imports. Green Things... And by the way, lots and lots of poinsettias. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsarizona.com. Great place to shop for Christmas.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
A Citizens Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is preparing to develop the next RTA plan. That's why members want your input on a survey of draft guiding principles they prepared. The principles will help guide them as they develop the next 20-year plan, which would be funded by a voter-required extension of the RTA's half-cent excise or sales tax. To take the survey or sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
And we're back live in the studio. Shelley Fishman sitting in for the ailing and speechless Bill Buckmaster. And I'm very pleased to be here with David Safir, who writes blog for the Tucson Weekly on education. And David, just should mention that we're broadcasting from the Green Things in Socolo Village studio, and the hotline is open if you want to talk to the if you want to talk to David or ask a question or make a comment, 790-2040. David, when we broke before the commercial break we just took, we were talking a little bit about the difficulty in having parents be able to trust that when they come to Arizona, they can get their kids a good education. What are their choices? How do we solve that problem?
Well, one way we solve it is by communication. Some people see public education as monolithic. Public schools are either failing or they're succeeding. And in fact, we have a wide variety of public schools. You and I were just talking about Catalina Foothills and Vail, which have a high-income population, and their schools, like schools in high-income areas, their kids are college-bound, they get the AP classes. If you're looking for that, you can go to those schools. TUSD, I don't want to knock TUSD. TUSD has very fine schools and a wide variety of students, and you can get everything from the quite academic instruction to instruction that's more skill building, where students need skill building. So there are plenty of options here in Phoenix, all around the state, to get really fine education in the school district schools. And there are selective charter schools, and BASIS is the one that everyone knows, that also are very highly academic. So if you're looking for that kind of a thing, depending on where you place yourself and depending on where you place your children, you can get a wide variety, a wide assortment of education.
And TUSD seems to be doing better these days.
I am pleased. I have never been one of those people who thought TUSD was failing and doing miserably, but it's starting to do better, starting to stabilize. The new superintendent, who's been there for a couple of years, Superintendent Trujillo, is kind of one of those no-drama, low-key guys who leads quietly and well. There haven't been any, you know, if you look in the news, you haven't seen the TUSD scandals, the scandals about discipline and the scandals about Mexican-American studies and about schools closing. And no news in this case is good news, because sure, it means that schools can continue to work and to build.
So there is a TUSD proposal in the news, and you wanted to talk about it. They want to reopen a school that's been closed for about 7 years, Wakefield Middle School. Is that a good idea?
That's right. Well, it's a mixed bag. I'll tell you, the reason it's good is that they're thinking positively and they're thinking in the right direction, they're thinking of moving forward by opening a school in an area, this is down in the south and west of the district, where apparently the population is growing. And because the population is growing, the schools near it, the other middle schools, are busting at the seams. They have too many kids. So they say this is an opportunity to not only open a new school, but to make it kind of a lab school. What they want to do is partner with the University of Arizona, which is always a great idea, mm-hmm, with the school. What they want to do is bring in new teachers who will have one mentor, an experienced master teacher, for every two new teachers, usually it's 1 to 10, to really help these students, these new teachers along, and it's so difficult the first couple of years, and grow them into the district, mm-hmm, and hopefully use it as a place that will actually draw teachers
in. So that idea is scalable.
Oh, absolutely. They want to start there as a test, and if it works, they can take it elsewhere. Now, there are all kinds of issues here, but I want to make sure to bring up one issue. One issue is that it's going to cost the district about $2 million to $2.5 million. And when you ain't got money, $2 million to $2.5 million is a lot of money. But Shelley, if we added the $1 billion to the state budget, that we should be adding just to bring us up to where we were in 2008 in real dollars and current dollars, that would add $50 million to the TUSD budget.
So, David Safir, how is TUSD proposing to do this? Because we know that as of right now, we're not going to get that extra money from the state.
To some extent, they're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Okay.
And some people are worried about that. They say the money should go into teacher salaries. Some people say the money should go into the school, some other feeder schools. They're worried that some schools that are under-enrolled, that are further away, are going to be further under-enrolled by this new school. So they're having to make a choice. And I think they're making, if it's not the best choice, I think it's a progressive, wise, thoughtful, moving forward type of a choice. And I hope they go through with it, and I hope it happens. But we shouldn't even be worried about this, because $2 million, oh, it's a lot of money.
I think it's a rounding error, right?
Yes, it should be. When DUSD should have, just to get back to 2008 standards, $50 million more, we still have $48 million left after we reintroduce Wakefield to do some of these things that are just waiting at TUSD.
So is this something that they can kind of do because they run the place, or is this something that is going to require public comment and perhaps even comments from the state?
I don't know, and that's a good question. I'm working on an article, which is an excellent article from The Star. The Star has been doing a good job of covering education lately, and it doesn't talk about that part of the issue, but I know there will be comment, and if the district is smart, they will listen to people and bring people in from the public to chew this idea over and see how it can work and then modify it a bit. I mean, one thing they're talking about is express buses from certain parts of the district to bring students there or to bring students elsewhere. They're hoping, and I think it makes sense, they're hoping that it'll actually add numbers to the district. Over the last few years, 3, 4, 5 years, the district has been losing 1,000 to 1,500 students per year. Last year, it lost under 200. It lost 180. Things are leveling off. Things are evening. And a school like this could actually bring back students by the 10s and the 20s and the 30s and add things.
And the more students we have, the more money we get from the state and from federal sources.
Because, as I said, the money is allocated per student. So the TUSD submits a bill to the state, says, I have X number of students. I have 45,000 students, which is about right. You have to pay me X number of dollars per student, and that's how it gets its money.
Okay, in a minute and a half left, I'm going to change the subject on you, and we didn't talk about this. Why in the world would somebody want to be a teacher?
Well, you're talking to a guy who was a teacher for 33 years,
right.
I guess, and it's something I always wanted
to
do. It drove me nuts. You know, I didn't know, and I'm going to say this honestly, I didn't know how hard I was working and the stress I was under until 2 years after I retired, and I said, my shoulders feel like they're 10 pounds lighter in terms of the burdens I had on my shoulders. Even during the summer, when you're not teaching, you're thinking about it. And when you see those 25 or 30 kids out there, and they're all saying, in a sense, feed me educationally, and then some of them are messing around with your head, it's very, very difficult, but it is so rewarding for people who like the rewards. And that's why I was there.
Tell us a little bit about why it's great.
Oh, you know, there would be days when I felt so good at the end of the day. Other days I wouldn't feel so good. But I felt so good at the end of the day, I thought I could leave my car in the parking lot and run home. I had so much energy in me from what it did. You get a salary, but if teachers taught for the salary, it wouldn't work. There is a reward, an immense reward of giving, and then those times when you receive back from the students one way or another or from parents, I still remember those moments.
Wow.
That happened 10, 20, 30 years ago that were the moments I said, this is why I'm here.
David Safir, thank you so much. I know I took you by surprise a little bit in that last question, but I knew you enjoyed it. I could see it on your face. And it's so important to talk about why it's a good thing. And we know why it's underpaid. We know why there's pressure like crazy. But at the end of the day, you're doing something really good for society.
Absolutely.
This is Shelley Fishman. I'm sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who promises to be back tomorrow. We'll see. I hope he is well enough to do that. Broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio here at KVOI. I'd like to thank John Couch for being a really great engineer and producer for us, and wish all the listeners to the Bill Buckmaster Show the best of holiday seasons.